Welcome everyone to this week's episode of Electric Podcast. I'm Fred Lambert, and I'm joined by Seth Winchon, who's doing a little better this week. How are you doing, Seth?
Good, a little better. I still got some of that flu with me.
Yeah, it's been going around. Yeah. This week, another insane week for the EV news, especially because of the Tesla earnings, but also a bunch of other stuff that we're going to get into. But let's start with the earnings. Two quarters in a row that they're making money. That's a first ever for Tesla.
And not just barely. They're making a few million.
Yeah, there was a decent amount. I mean, I thought that the street was a little bit optimistic with the $2 per share non-GAAP revenue, but they ended up delivering like 198 or something, 193 per share, which is basically meeting the profit a little under expectation, but that's it. Revenue was higher than expected. I mean, we knew that the revenue had a good chance to be higher because of there was still a big uptick from Q3 to Q4 in terms of Model 3 deliveries, but a lot of the deliveries ended up being mid-range Model 3 instead of the higher-end version like the previous quarter. They still managed to increase revenue. And there was a bunch of other interesting stuff that came out of those earnings, but in terms of actual financials, Elon insisted that he's pretty confident that they're still going to turn a profit in Q3 despite a more difficult market at this point. And also they have to pay back $920 million convertible note or something?
Pretty much $1 billion off the top line is gone.
Yeah, but they have the cash to do it, so that's a good news.
Yeah, they got the cash, but that cash might be used in other ways as well. So hopefully they make a profit this quarter.
Yeah, I think the focus is going to be like they don't have to turn $100 million in profit this time. Just be able to say that you made a profit so that you can stay true to the promise, or at least the guidance that Tesla is going to be profitable every quarter starting from Q3 2018. So that was because that was a big commitment that Elon did at that point. And at that point, we're talking 6 months ago now. More than 6 months ago, because he made that the islands before the Q3. Not many people was convinced that it would happen even for the first two quarters. So now they have two quarters in a row, and it looks good coming forward. And I have to say, a lot of why Tesla is going to be profitable, I mean, a lot comes down to spending management. I mean, just the capital expenditure for they released the projection for 2019. And they are predicting only $2.5 billion. Did I get it right? Yeah, $2.5 billion for the year. That doesn't sound like a lot, right?
Way down.
Way down.
Not way down, but, you know, they made, like, many mentions in their earnings call of how they're finally getting a handle on spending.
Mm-hmm.
It does seem like they're cutting out just about everything, all the fat, I guess. And, of course, we got that email a couple weeks ago where Elon said again that when they're slicing off 7% of the labor force, they're also cutting out all the all the extra freelancers and temps and contract workers as well. So they're very lean right now.
Yeah, that will help for sure, but there's still Tesla has so many projects in 2019. From the Tesla Semi to the Tesla Model Y. Tesla Model Y, it's going to be a lot of expenses in equipment for, even though it looks like there's not going to be any new factory. And it's coming out only next year. There's going to be a lot of spending. There should be a lot of spending for it this year. And some work starting from the pickup truck too. We're going to get into that. There's going to be a lot of project going on that are going to require some capital expenditure, but it looks like Tesla is ready to approach that very lean, which hasn't always been the case. So,
yeah, I mean, I guess they learned some stuff with the Model 3 build out. Mm-hmm. The Model Y is going to be a little bit similar to the Model 3. So, that line that they're building in China is going to cost way less than the line here.
Mm-hmm.
The line in at Gigafactory 1 is going to theoretically not quite cost quite as much because they've already kind of learned what not to do. So theoretically, they could keep it pretty lean.
Yes. And Yeah, because if you look at just how tough it was to get that 5,000 units per week of Model 3s and all the mistake that they did to get there, if you can just like get away of half those mistakes, you can probably save a ton of money on the second half of the ramp up to 10,000 units. Speaking of that, Tesla, they changed a little bit the guidance for Model 3 production, because originally we thought that, well, I think they literally said that they can see Tesla doing 10K a week in Fremont at some point from Model 3s. But now he's talking about 7K a week in Fremont that they're going to ramp up to over the next few months or throughout 2019. And then the 10K is going to be achieved through 3K a week in China, Gigafactory 3. So that was some kind of clarification that came out within the earnings. So 7,000 units of Model 3s per week in Fremont, another 3,000 units by the end of the year in China, which is sounds like a pipe dream to me. I mean, the site, it's a bunch of dirt. There's a lot of movement, a lot of construction going on already, but it's still just a pile of dirt. And yeah, within 11 months...
They have some pretty good optimism over there. also, I think they're taking down the they're rolling back, I guess, Model S and X production, or at least the amount of people on those production lines. So it's surprising to me that that they're also cutting back their estimates on Fremont to 7,000. So we're scaling back everything in Fremont. Although that being said, the factory is full right now. Like. Yeah. There's nowhere for people to park.
Been like that for a while too.
Maybe they're kind of getting a little bit of realism in there, like what you can actually do in Fremont. Also, Fremont isn't where the cheapest labor force in the world is. It's Silicon Valley. So
that's maybe an understatement of the year. Not the cheapest labor force.
No.
Yeah.
So maybe the economics of Fremont aren't making as much sense as they used to.
Yeah, and that's a good segue to Model Y and the production plan, which we got a little update on throughout the earnings, with Tesla confirming that they want to reach volume production by the end of next year, by the end of 2020, which is already, well, they already said that they want to start production by the end of next year, and they want to say volume production. But what volume production means, I think more like Model 3, like what Model Y in 2020 and 2021 is going to be, I feel like it's going to be Model 3 in 2017, 2018, which was, we started production very slowly during the last half of 2020, and yeah. Then there's going to be a ramp up the volume production in 2021, but Tesla is, as usual, being a little bit more optimistic here. What was crazy about that statement was they said most likely happen in at Gigafactory 1. So not it's going to happen at Gigafactory 1, most likely Gigafactory 1. And then in the conference call, that was in the shareholders letter, so like it's black and white, it's written in black and white. But then Elon also made a similar comment where he said Gigafactory 1, but then he put like a little question mark around it too. So I'm not sure what's that about. I assume that there might be like another deal going on that, like, maybe they kind of take over a GM factory or something that's far fetched. They're still working towards that, but they most likely think that it's gonna fail. So Gigafactory run is the most likely option, hence the mention of most likely. But it's weird that you have a large scale vehicle program
and you don't know where you're gonna put it.
Yeah, and they're talking production in the next 2 years. Within 2 years, they're going to have a vehicle, a volume production of that vehicle, and they don't know where that's going to be. And that sounds a little bit insane to me, because normally any other automaker, if it's 2 years away, there's already a production investment being made in terms of equipment, machinery, dial, stamping, and everything. That's already...
I mean, they're already starting to hire people.
Yeah, that too. But at the same time, we have to give it to Tesla and what Elon said, because you said that they have approved the prototype and everything, and the prototype shares 70% of this of it. No, more than that, 76%. Is that right? 76% of parts with Model 3. That's what he said, right?
Sounds familiar.
Yeah.
I don't remember.
I might be losing 70 or 76. Anyway, both number would be impressive either way. So if that's the case, at least it should facilitate the launch of production. But I mean, at the same time, it's going to mean ramping up production of those parts, and that has been difficult too for Model 3.
What percentage of Model S and X are the same?
He did release that at some point too, and it was ridiculously small. I think it's going to be like it was closer to 30% or something. It's basically the powertrain. The powertrain is the same. Powertrain, right. Battery pack, and everything is the same there.
And but, those are built on the same line.
Yeah, that too. But they had to change basically everything else because there was too many. They put too many restrictions on themselves with the seats, like the third row and the more ambitious seats. Of course, the Falcon Wing doors change the whole body of the car if you have Falcon Wing doors. Which brings me to another point. That basically confirmed that there's not going to be any Falcon Wings doors, right? If you're sharing over 70% of your parts with Model 3s, how can you make that happen?
It seems unlikely. And I think a lot of people would be glad about that.
Yeah, it would change the body. Yeah, when we did our surveys on that, the strong majority of people didn't want Falcon Wings doors on a Model Y. Which I get why, but still.
Still pretty cool.
Yeah, they're cool. So very aggressive production plan for Model Y, and still not confirmed at Gigafactory 1, but it looks like it's at least a backup plan, and the main plan might just fail. So it's going to be either that, though. We've heard Tesla looking at like factory locations still in California again, which, to your point, is a weird in terms of a labor cost. Just the labor cost between Bay Area and going 2 hours away. No, what is it, 4 hours away at the Gigafactory in Nevada, maybe, from Fremont?
It probably depends on the weather, but yeah. I think 4 hours is safe.
Yeah.
That's what your Tahoe commute is.
Yeah. So just that alone, you go 4 hours east and the labor costs are already a lot less. But Tesla's also having some difficulties like hiring in this place because it's also not in the middle of nowhere, but as close to you can be in the
you know, office. Reno is actually blowing up, and it's not just, I mean, it's obviously Tesla's a huge part of that, but I think it's like the fastest growing city in the US right now. And it's Apple's there, Google's there, Amazon's there, Microsoft is there. They all have the data centers. They all have knowledge centers as well. I think the University of Nevada. Plus, you know, there's a lot of really nice ski resorts out there. Mm-hmm. We were out there for Interbike, and I couldn't believe how much fun that place was. So mm-hmm. It's kind of like Vegas, but a little bit more more woodsy.
Yeah. A lot more woodsy.
Yeah.
In Vegas. There are a few other interesting comments made during the call, especially what Elon mentioned, the pickup truck again. And they are aiming for an unveiling during the summer. So there was some speculation that it could be at the same time as the Model Y. Model Y was maybe planned for March, but that isn't confirmed yet. So
that means two events probably, right? Or are they moving Model Y to summer to at the same time?
I think that's still a possibility. So either two events or Model Y could also be pushed to summer.
Either way, I kind of wish Tesla would just, and as you said a bunch of times, just come out and say we're building a pickup truck, just so the Ford, the Ram and the Chevy Silverado will all just, sales will just cut off of that.
Yeah, well, opening the reservation, I think, is the most important thing, just to show, I mean, just like it worked with the Model 3, just show that demand for it, and they'll start freaking out.
Yep.
A lot. Also, some interesting, if not crazy, comments about self-driving. That's a quote, word for word, from Elon. When will we think it's safe for full self-driving? It's probably toward the end of this year, and then it's up to the regulator to decide when they want to approve that. All right, so he's been saying things like that for a while now, but that's just as clear as he ever said it. He thinks that Tesla would have the software ready by the end of the year, And then they're gonna see they're gonna be working with the regulators to see if they can actually push that to cars, which they're gonna be able to in some markets. You know some markets want to be on top of that. They want everything that applies to it, and they are willing to take a little bit more risk. But at the same time, if Tesla is ready to do it, they probably that means they've been doing their research a lot, because you want to be the first to market with that, because it has incredible impact. But the first to market has a huge responsibility to be safe, because you're gonna screw up the party for everyone else.
You also don't want to kill all your citizens.
Yeah, and to be fair too, a bunch of other companies have been targeting the end of 2019. But like Waymo, for example, but Waymo is just not the same, because Waymo is a geographically locked market that they are going after, and they need to map out the whole market and things like that. So they are aiming to release their service in Phoenix by the end of the year, commercially, I mean, because they've already been doing some pretty impressive stuff. But Tesla, they are talking about really a real full self-driving system where you let the AI go, and with the sensor equipment, the car should be able to handle everything, or at least most things. So that would be impressive. You made a few comments on what they are actually working on. Advent summon is probably coming this month, and that's going to be enable the system to navigate complex parking lots. And so we've been talking about that for a while now. But he says that they are also looking at traffic lights, stops, and everything that Autopilot basically doesn't handle right now. He says that in the current version that they have, it handles about, it works fine 98% of the time. But they need to be at 99.99999, which is, you cannot be 100%, it's impossible, but humans are not 100%, not even close, really. But that last 1.999%, I think is might be as difficult as the other 98%. So
yeah, it's gonna be tough.
So that's one of the comments from Elon, that I've been on board with Tesla doing some impressive thing, and I think they're gonna do some crazy things this year. This one, I'm not so sure that they're gonna be able to do this year, unless because Elon is also big on the AI aspects of things. I've just watched the Chris Pine "Do You Trust This Computer?" AI documentary, which is a great documentary that I recommend. And Elon is in it a bunch, and you can see that he's really close to AI research. So unless you have like a real full general AI that just, all right, let me take over that whole self-driving car thing, and you can handle it, and maybe Tesla is behind that or something that we just don't know. Unless they have something like that just happens like very, very fast. I'd be pleasantly surprised. I mean, selfishly in a way, because I actually own a car that could get this this software update, and also the computer upgrade that you need to make it happen. Last thing that we're going to discuss about the call is Deepak Ahuja, CFO, retiring for the second time. This time for good, apparently, and he's going to be replaced by Zach Kirkhorn, who's been at Tesla for almost 9 years now. So he's been somewhat of a protege of Deepak, and he's going to be taking over the role throughout the transition period, where Deepak is going to stay for a while and then going to stay on indefinitely as an advisor, but not as an executive at a company. So it happened before. A few years ago, Deepak also left, but ended up coming back after probably some begging from Elon and the executive team.
Yeah, I mean, what do you think the deal was with Wheeler? Like, did he leave on his own? He couldn't handle it? Did Elon just get sick of him and say, Deepak, come back for a couple years until we can groom somebody else? Or
all of these suggestions make sense to a degree. But apparently Wheeler did leave in good terms, because there was a transition period and he stayed on as advisor too for a while. So I really don't know. But there was a lot of shakeup in Tesla's financial team for the last 3 years. Maybe there was a revolving door.
I don't know if you were at the end of the call, because it got really boring. This one, When Kirkhorn talked, though, it could not have been, he could not have been a more boring voice. Which, like, of course, he's a, you know, CFA or whatever.
But it was his first time, too. Maybe he was nervous.
His first time, nervous, like, no prepping and no, you know, tutoring from media types. But, like, man, it's gonna be rough seas ahead if we gotta listen to this guy.
Deepak was never also a character and everything. But he was good. I mean, especially...
For sure,
I'm with Elon a lot of times when it comes to like the boring analyst questions, and especially when it's like literally half of the analyst question. I felt in the last call were things that was answered in the shareholders' letter. So unless are they not giving enough time for them to read the whole letter and everything, or like I don't know. But and Deepak is really good to just like, hey, you're going to repeat the letter real quick and say the information is in there. I don't know. Of course, the shorts love it. When a CFO leaves, it's
a big conspiracy. Like, yeah. they're going to state's evidence.
But yeah, I don't think it's that big of a deal. And I like the fact that they went with someone in-house. Especially someone who's been there for 9 years. So, because you cannot argue against Deepak's skills as a CFO, because for his tenure from 2008 to now, like Tesla could not have been an easy company to lead the financials of. So kudos to Deepak. I'm sure he's responsible for a lot of Tesla's success over the years. So shout out to him. And the fact that it looks like this guy has been working with him for 9 years out of those 11 years, I think it bodes well for the department at this point.
Right. So he's not going to be surprised by the way things work at Tesla. Yeah. I think some folks come in and they're just like, whoa, this is crazy.
And he's been working under a guy that's been making it work with that craziness for so long. So he probably took some skills. All right, moving on from the earnings, we go to technology stuff again. The new software log battery pack from Model S and X. So this is a bit disappointing because we've been speculating a lot on that over the years, and we were focusing more on the best possible option, which I think would have been a new harmonization of the hardware architecture for the battery pack Model S and X with Model 3s with the new 2570 cells and everything like that. Instead, the solution they had for the replacement of the 75 kilowatt battery pack is basically the easiest one that they could have made, that it looks like. They are sticking with only producing the 100 kilowatt hour battery pack, but they're going to produce a software lock version to be a little bit less expensive. And at the same time, they are moving away from the naming scheme of using the kilowatt hour capacity of the pack as a name for the car or even as any reference. They're not even telling you what the capacity is in any of those packs. But we got a confirmation with Tesla that they're sticking with the 100 kilowatt hour pack, and there's no hardware upgrade at all. It's just software stuff and marketing stuff. So now the Model S and X base version are just called Model S and Model X. And they are equipped with a 100 kilowatt hour pack, but it's software locked at what looks like about 92% of the capacity of the pack. But they're not telling you that. They're just telling you the range. So Model S starting at 310 miles of range, which is the same as the Model 3 long range. That's probably not a coincidence. $85,000. Model X with the same software lock pack, 270 miles, $88,000. More expensive than the previous version, the base version of both of those cars, but you get a hell of a lot more range too. So it's about, what, $10,000 more dollars, but 60 more miles, more than that.
Yeah, and it's not just more range. Basically, you know how like every night you don't really charge your car all the way up because that's not good for the battery? When you have a software lock battery, you can charge it 100% every night,
mm-hmm.
Because you're not hitting that software lock portion. That also means that at superchargers, it's going to charge a lot faster
at the end than a
typical battery. So there's a lot of advantages to having the bigger battery. The disadvantage is you're carrying around a lot of batteries that you're not using.
Mm-hmm.
But I think overall it's a pretty big win for people at the base model side.
Yeah. And then for the what used to be the Model S and X 100D, now they're going to be called Model S and X Extended Range. So not Model S and X Long Range like Model 3 Long Range, but Extended Range. Okay. And well, nothing has changed in terms of specs for those ones, but they are $1,000 less expensive. $93,000 for Model S, $96,000 for Model X. So there was a little change on that front. Then bigger change on the performance side of thing, because unsurprisingly now they are called Model S and X Performance instead of being P100D. A while back, I don't remember when, but Tesla at some point stopped making the ludicrous mode an upgrade, and they made it like standard on the performance version. So basically every Model S and X Performance were P100D ludicrous. Now Tesla is unbundling those the ludicrous upgrade from the performance version, so you can just buy a Model S and X Performance, which starts for Model S $112,000, Model X $117,000, and you get 3 seconds 0-60 for Model S, 3.5 for the Model X.
It's $20,000 to go 0.6 seconds faster.
Yeah, then if you want that ludicrous mode, and also an important point here that not everyone caught, I think, is that ludicrous mode, you can, we should mention that too. You can unlock that 8% from the Model S and X to Model S and X Extended Range aftermarket every time you want, just through a software update, like you could with previous version of the software, like battery pack, with Tesla was saying then.
Yeah.
Now Tesla is doing the same thing with the ludicrous mode too, which used to be a hardware upgrade. If you guys remember, Tesla had the connector with the iConnel inside to be able to handle the higher... Oh, sorry about that. That was my coffee pot that's telling me it's not going to heat anymore. That iConnel battery upgrade, which handles higher amperage. So now it looks like this... Well, it was standard with every performance car since ludicrous mode wasn't an upgrade anymore. So it's staying the case, and now Tesla is just software locking the performance on all Model S and X Performance, and you can pay that like set sell $20,000 to get that ludicrous mode, which for Model S brings the 0-60 down to 2.4 and 2.8 for Model X Performance ludicrous mode, that's called. All right, so what do we think about that? I mean, it makes sense business wise. It makes sense consumer-wise, too, if you look at the value, like you said, for the non-extended range version, just the Model X and X. I think they are good value vehicles, even though they are quite expensive. But from a business sense, I just don't know how many people were buying the base version. Tesla probably, looking at the statistic, they were seeing that since Model 3 came out, not that many people were buying the base version of Model S and X, so now they made the base version more attractive, which I think they really are with that update. But they are increasing the differentiation between the like a long range Model 3 and a dual motor long range Model 3, which is the only one now. Yeah, because if I give you the choice before that change between a Model 3 long range dual motor and the Model S, which was standard 75 dual motor. Which one you've chosen for the 15 to $20,000 difference?
I don't know. I'd probably get a Model X. I'm no longer like Model S was my first car, my first Tesla. But no longer.
I'm giving you just those two options here for like to explain why I think the base Model S.
What two options?
Model 3 long range dual motor, which is now the base, like the only the base dual motor you can get, and the Model S 75D, which was also because it was only offered in dual motor. So those options were getting pretty close.
Yeah, no, I would definitely get the Model 3. That's what I'm thinking. I'm Model 3 all the way.
Yeah,
I like small cars. I even drive a Chevy Bolt, like happily on purpose.
On purpose, as if you got confused one day and you entered the Volvo 3 instead of the Volt or vice versa.
Has the Model S and X been $3,000 apart before? I can't remember.
You're right. It is for the base version right now.
Yeah,
I think 4,000 might have been the closest before. And that's a good point.
So, I mean, if you're buying a base Model X at 88,000, that's pretty tempting over a Model X at 85,000. I mean, you're talking about 40 miles less of range, 0.6 seconds slower. But, like, you get the doors, you get the way more room. It's, like, that's a pretty good price for a Model X. New. Mm-hmm.
And those, like you said, with the software locked, they're attractive, really. So, I think it's a good deal, but I think it's still the easiest solution at this and went with the old Dunman from Model S and X program. I think a new battery architecture would make sense. And I feel like it still has to come at some point in order to enable the supercharger V3 charge rate and stuff like that. So we'll see. Yeah, and there's still the interior refresh that we know is coming later this year.
Yeah, so it was interesting, though, because I remember Elon saying at one point that they were going to switch over the Model S and X to the 2170 cells, and now it sounds like they're not going to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Is that weird? I mean, is it possible that they would discontinue the Model S and X and they'd have a new, like, you know, Model 3 huge or Model 3, you know, whatever? Is that, I mean, are we thinking something like that? Or is it the Model S going to stick around, or are they going to get rid of it?
Like, what did he say word for word? I think he said, we have no plan right now to change the Model S. So that sounds like something to... that they have to say, because they know as soon as they say it, then...
Right, people are going to wait.
Yeah, people are going to wait for it. So I'm not so sure. Maybe it's a deal also with Panasonic, because Panasonic, all those cells are coming from their Japanese and their Asian factories, and maybe they still need to get some of that supply. I don't know.
I mean, would they change the name? Like, when they do that big update, you know, the big update that we've seen kind of the interior for, that looks more like a Model 3?
Yeah, that's just going to be the interior. I don't think it's going to come with an exterior update.
You don't think it... I mean, that's such a big update interior-wise that I wonder if that's going to be a different name, like a Model S whatever, or Model X whatever.
I don't know. I feel like Model S and X are here to stay. I think they're going to be long-term vehicle programs for sure. All right, we're going to talk a little bit about Tesla Corsa. We went there, myself, Jamie, our contributors, and Scott Buscemi, our videographer, to take a look at this fun event, which is organized by Unplugged Performance, the well-known Tesla tuner based in California here. And very fun event. Basically, the goal of it is to give... because for most people, myself included, for most Tesla owner, I think when you buy a Tesla vehicle, is the more powerful vehicle, the more capable vehicle that you have ever bought. And most of us drive them on the street every day with only using a fraction of the capacity of the vehicle. So what Tesla Corsa does, it's a full day track experience at the racetrack to give the opportunity to those owners to explore the limits of the performance of that car, and boy is it fun. I didn't have the opportunity to drive it, of course, because my Model 3 is just not in California right now, but there were 50 other owners there to have fun with it, and it was fun talking to them. And first of all, one of the interesting thing about it, it's open to all Tesla owners, and there's a ton of Tesla owners in California. But they had only 50 spots. And out of the 50 spots, almost all of them were Model 3s. Most of them performance Model 3s. Most of them performance Model 3s with the track mode on. So I think that was the attractive thing for people to go on the track and use that track mode that you only get to use a lot. And it was really impressive to see owners like really testing the system in a somewhat safe environment. And we have to be safe because they push their car pretty hard, and we've seen one guy crash into the wall, but he was okay. His car was mostly okay too, and a few other people ended up spinning out of control, but with no big damage. I think maybe one person blown their tires during the spun out, but that's about it. And they did some interesting time. Like we got some fun data out of it because a lot of people were running stock car and stock car with a few modifications, some stock car, then some pretty hardcore modifications, so non-stock. If you look at the actual times here, the best time for a completely stock car, let me check, completely stock was even Eugene Brannigan, who I think is the one that actually crashed his car at the end of the day. he ran a 205.4 lap in the completely stock Model 3 on track performance. Then you look at the next best car on a stock car without using track mode, and it's 211.2. So that can give you an indication of just like the potential for track mode here. Then the fastest time on a Model 3 without slick tires, which can make a big difference, that was Kevin Becker, a SpaceX engineer. He was there with the Model 3, but there was some modification on his car. He had the new coilover for Unplug. He had also the performance brake in the front of the car from Unplug. Different wheels too, more performance tire. And he had the Unplug lip, which helped a little bit with downforce. And Unplug actually claimed that it increased aerodynamics too, so you can leave it all the time and still get good range out of it. So he did a 204.8. Which is impressive. But the best time of the day is Cameron Rogers. We've been reporting on Cameron's exploit as a Model 3 performance driver for a while now. He's been breaking records at a bunch of tracks all over California. And he came down to Bottom Willow here. And he managed a time of 1.58.8. So he was the only one that broke under the 2 seconds time. But he had slick tires. And the modification of his Model 3 is a little bit more extreme. He also has a different lip, but if you go see the pictures on the electric, the lip is a lot deeper, a lot more downforce, and probably kills the aerodynamics of the car. He also has a crazy spoiler in the back, a long spoiler. But those guys are more like amateur racers that do it frequently and everything, but a bunch of people are also beginners and were really learning the track. Their cars for the first time, so that was a ton of fun. And they want to do it a lot. They want to do it a lot more, and not just in California. Give it the opportunity of people to do it somewhere else too. So you can sign up on Tesla Corsair's website and tell them where you're from and everything. And if they have enough demand in some region, they're gonna try to organize a bunch of different events throughout the year at a bunch of different locations. So that would be cool. Also, I want to note something that's interesting because it kind of reminded me why we do this whole thing. Anyway, it was my first time going to Central Valley in California, and I was really shocked when I went in the Grapevines a few times, but just never come out the other side. And when you actually come out on the other side, the smog you have in that valley, it's absolutely insane. Like, you see it right away as soon as you're in the valley. It somehow just captures all the air pollution from the Bay Area, from Los Angeles, and it just ends up right in that valley there where you grew all the food from half of America, basically. And it's really shocking because, especially we were at the track, and half the day the track was gas-powered cars, so you can smell it, you can hear it, you can do everything. And then you have 50 Tesla that ends up on the tracks, complete silence except for the rubber burning and everything. And you start thinking, man, if everything was like that, that smog would probably not be as significant as it was. Have you ever seen that, the Central Valley set?
Yeah, it's disgusting. I used to fly planes in California, and I would fly into Paseo Robles, which is kind of up there. And it would always be like, I mean, it's gross flying into LA a lot of the time. A lot of the time you just like, you're above LA, and then you come down, and you can see just the soot layer. Mm-hmm. It's even worse. Like you've seen it.
Yeah, well, that's a thing too. I thought like Los Angeles has to be worse. It's a big city. It's a huge city. Many millions of people are there. But you see the difference right away when you go in the country like that, and you go in the valley. It has to be because it's of the mountains. It's like it's really surrounded by a pretty significant mountain range all around it.
Yeah, there's not a ton of wind there either.
No.
And I think there's like a lot of agricultural pollution.
Yeah, Jamie was telling me that. He was telling me that. So, well, two things. Like, there's a huge highway there that there's a lot of trucks that go on that highway. So Tesla Semi, you should take care of that highway right away and just replace all the trucks there. And agricultural equipment also, like the regulation for those things are for the emissions that they emit, they're not as strict as everything else. So,
and it is crazy. Like half of the agriculture in the country comes from that area, so it's really like kind of gross.
Yeah. So John Deere, get on top of that. I know that you have a prototype tractor, John Deere, but how about you take that thing into production and then all the rest of the equipment, and then you subsidize solar for a farmer that he can charge those things and be able to work all the time. That'd be awesome. But yeah, Tesla Corsa, very fun event. Shout out to Ben Schaefer and Unplugged Performance for inviting us. And go check them out if you want to have some fun on the track with your Tesla. All right, quick news that came out last night. Tesla officially launched a Model 3 in China. The first Model 3's are performance version are coming out, being delivered. But they also launched today the rear-wheel drive long-range version in China. So that's interesting because the model doesn't exist in the U.S. anymore. Well, it's not available for sale, at least. And they haven't... we've been thinking, basically, that Tesla's going to bring back the model for Europe and for China throughout the ramp-up. But now it's confirmed they do it. They did it, and they did it starting with China. So the pricing... is right now the Model 3 performance and the delivering will start at 566 RMB. What's RMB or what does it stand for? Chinese yen. $83,000 and now the new rear wheel drive long range, $64,000. And of course the long range in the US where the Model 3 starts at $51,000, but that is dual motor version.
Yeah, and part of getting to China really quickly, I think quicker than they would, I think they would have just done Europe if they had the choice, is because those, the trade war is happening. And they mentioned this a little bit on the conference call, but they want to get as many cars into Chinese hands as they can as quickly as possible in the event that the trade war is escalated and the, what is it at now, like 20% tax? And then it's going to go up to 50%?
Right now, it's temporarily at 25% until the end of Q1. So they have basically 2 months to deliver as many cars, unless it gets better. But I think most people think it's like, because it was supposed to go up to 40%. So
right. So they're trying to get as many cars as they can over there.
Yep. Tesla launches a new multi-state effort against direct sales ban. So. It's a new year. It's a new legislative sessions coming out in several states, and Tesla is taking the opportunity to make another push for make direct sales legal in a few states where they ban dealership for automakers. So those states include Connecticut again, which they tried that 4 times, didn't work. Maybe 5 times a charm. Nebraska, New Mexico, Oklahoma, South Carolina, and West Virginia. I think West Virginia was where the guy was making like a wartime video of like we need to fight Tesla and everything, like with the background as if he's like almost a general or something.
And then Elon said something. Oh no, we're not going to be in West Virginia. Like he said something pretty derogatory toward West Virginians. I think Connecticut's like the big one right here.
You know? Yeah, Connecticut is big, especially since like they're surrounded with states that like actually allow sales and everything. And I don't know. Some places the leadership's lobbies are just so strong that it makes it difficult. So if you want to get involved in trying to help. Tesla pass those bills, I mean, contact your representative and everything. And since those kinds of subjects are very local, and if it makes news, that's if it makes news, it only makes news in the local media and everything. If you want to keep me, if you want to get involved in those projects and you want to keep me updated about how it's going, don't hesitate to send me an email or something. We like to keep a close eye on that because it's such a weird situation and they just cannot... sell their cars based on the old laws that because it's so obvious that it's wrong, that's why it's so basic, because everyone know that those laws weren't made for that. They were made to protect dealership against their own automakers competing against dealership with franchise dealership. Tesla never had any franchise dealership. They are competing fairly. They just found a more efficient way to distribute cars. If you cannot compete against that, there might be something wrong with your model. Or otherwise, you will survive. Who knows? All right, moving on to non-Tesla news. Yesterday, I came back from Northern California to where I spent a few days, a full day, testing out the Kia Niro EV. So it's the next generation EV from Kia after the Soul. Now they have the Niro, which of course we already know as a gas-powered car, and then as a plug-in hybrid. Now they have an all-electric version of it with the same 64-kilowatt pack that we already seen on the Kona EV. But the Niro is a different packaging than the Kona. Different car, really. And I came out of the day with the car very impressed by it. I think there's a few things that bugs me, but they're all non-deal breakers. I mean, things like just the charge port being on the fake grill in the front end, which makes the whole front asymmetrical, which I think makes no sense. It just never happens with cars. So it's just things that bother me. For a few other things like the driver assist system are just are not great. The ping pong between the lines and everything, but you just don't use it really. The active cruise control is pretty good though. I'm gonna give in on that. The active cruise control was decent enough. But what is really impressive with this car is its efficiency. Just an efficiency beast, really. The actual EPA range estimate is 239 miles, which you'd think is a lot less than the Kona EV, which get 258 miles. But the Niro is a bigger car. It's a much longer than the... Is it taller? A bit taller. No, a bit wider. A bit longer. And yeah, not taller, but it feels taller though. When you're inside the car, in some angles, the car actually looks like an SUV. It's not an SUV, it's a crossover. But I think the form factor is really appealing. Much more like an SUV-like. And when people say 239 miles estimate APA, you can actually get that out of that car. We didn't get to drive it too much. I mean, I got 130 miles out of it in a full day of driving. But I think that day was pretty representative of what would be like a full cycle in terms of... we did a lot of highways, probably half of that, even a little bit more than half of that was a highway. Then we did some decent city driving and just normal city driving, some in traffic, some in not in traffic. And then for like a good 30 miles, I took the car up the mountain and just pushed it like a maniac. And surprisingly, the car was able to handle. I mean, it's not a car for that. It's not made for that at all. So I don't expect people to use it for that. But I still was able to have a ton of fun with it. And hopping down mountains for a good period of time, pushing it very hard. And still, we ended up getting 3.7 miles per kilowatt hour, which if you extrapolate that for a full charge, is 237 miles. So I expect that if you drive normally, you can get that up to like easily over 250 without like thinking about it at all. Of course, it was in Northern California, so in terms of... the driving conditions and the weather was perfect for it, so you take that into account. But still, I mean, it's not the first time we've seen Kia and Hyundai being very good at efficiency, and I think this car is another example. Now, they didn't want to confirm the pricing, so like I call that car one of the most important EV to hit the market, and it's true if the pricing is reasonable, which we think it will be. But so what we can do is extrapolate from the pricing in Europe, and our next story is actually, we can talk about that around. Hyundai released the Kona EV pricing in the US starting at $36,000. So we think that the price is going to be very similar, a little bit more expensive because it is a bigger car. I think the interior looks better too, a little bit. But if it's like just 10, 15%, 15% would be a lot, but 10 to 12% more expensive, closer to $40,000 starting price before incentive. I think it could be a popular car. I really do.
Yeah, I mean, it's got all the specs. Like, it's got the range, it's got the acceleration, it's got the space.
The acceleration, not so much. It has a lot of torque.
Yeah, but you said you said you drove it like a maniac and it responded well. So
yeah, well, okay. It does feel pretty quick, the acceleration, just not from a standstill. So if you use the 0 to 60 acceleration metric, the car doesn't sound fast at all, and that's because it's not from a standstill. Because it has more torque than every other car out there, every other, like the Bolt EV, the Leaf, or the car you would compare it to, 291 feet-pound torque. So, and what they did is that they tried to control it as much as possible from standstill, so to make sure that you don't burn out, to make sure that you don't kill those relatively small tires. So,
yeah, I mean, I have to say, like, it just does not look like it doesn't look like a sporty car, and I don't think that I don't think the Kona is. I don't think the Niro is. I don't think the gas versions of them look good. No. So it's not like the EV problem. It's just they decided to make a very ordinary looking car an EV, which is fine. Like, people obviously buy ordinary looking cars all the time, and I think they'll sell as many as they make.
But yeah, that's the next issue. Then as many as they make. Pleasantly surprised, because I thought it was going to be the same thing as the Hyundai for with the Kona EV, which they already announced is going to be limited to California. It's going to be and whatnot. They actually said that they want to sell those in 12 states. So 12 states, that's all the carb states, plus Georgia, Texas, and Hawaii. So those states, they don't actually get the credit. So we have to give them credit for that. It's not completely a compliance car. But they didn't say that they have plans to sell in the 50 states. So it's not a full normal vehicle program either. So I'm not completely on board with that. But the reason why they are limiting to 12 states is that the production is going to be limited for sure. James Bell, the director of director of communication for Kia North America, he said that they are expecting some limitation in terms of the allocation for the U.S. market, meaning that they are focusing more in Europe and other markets than the U.S. Another very worrying comment that they made during that press event was that they gave a projection for the tax credits. They said that they expect to still have the $7,500 tax credit until 2023-2024. And we know that the limit for the tax credit is 200,000 deliveries. So it means that they expect to have fewer than 200,000 deliveries by 2024. And that's not just the Niro EV. That's the Kia Soul EV that's been delivered for the past few years. Granted, they don't deliver that many of those. Like, it's a few thousand per year. But they also have the PHEV version of the Niro now that's also getting the credit. And that they've been selling for a few months now. Then they're going to have the BEV. And the Kia Soul is getting an update too. It's going to be a little bit more attractive. I don't know if they're going to try to sell more of them. But so you have those three cars that are getting the credit, and that's over 4 years, 4 or 5 years. So my thinking is gonna they don't plan to deliver many of those in the U.S. So,
and it's weird. Doesn't Hyundai owns like a big portion of Kia, right?
Yeah, they have like a control. 50%. They have a controlling stake, I think.
But that doesn't eat into their allocation at all, neither one of the companies, right?
No, that's the thing. If you have the different brands like that, like it's not like GM with having different brands. It's really two different companies. That's the big advantage, I think.
That's interesting. I wonder if there's some sort of workaround that Tesla could, you know, like sell, you know,
a new Tesla brand.
It's, you know, $7,500 per car. That's a lot of cash.
I didn't like that. And one of the exec there said a comment like, now that Tesla doesn't get the full credit in the U.S., that's opened the doors for people like us to get in. I'm like, does it? Are you taking advantage of that? If that was true, you'd try to get the 200,000 credit done by the end of the year and just take advantage of it for real. They're not. They won't take advantage of it over 4 or 5 years. You're not taking advantage of anything. You're just slowly making enough car for compliance.
It's weird. Though at the same time,
they are Georgia, Texas, and Hawaii is not needed for compliance. So I don't know. I feel weird because I think the car would sell out with like
maybe they're not breaking even on their battery.
Yeah, maybe they're losing money. If not, so I don't know. But I think like for starting at $40,000 and going up to $50,000 fully equipped, especially with the credit, and so a bunch of people, you can buy a Model 3 for $50,000 now, and a pretty good Model 3. Sure, but it's not a crossover. People love crossover. They fall in love with it. And I mean,
that one's not going off-road at all. So it's not like that kind of crossover.
No, it's not that kind of crossover. But you get an edge back, like you get a hatch in the back. So that's an advantage. The trunk is nothing to kill someone for. I mean, you can put the body in there. but you don't have a frunk either. If Kia would have designed that car to be just electric, just battery electric, and not a three-platform vehicle, I think it would have been a lot better, of course, because you create limitations for yourself when you do a three-powertrain platform, and including things like the front-wheel drive, just not as fun to drive, and you could have space for like a dual-motor option, which would have been great. There's a ton of different things that they could have done, but even then, it's still a good value vehicle, I think, with the tax credit especially.
Yeah, I think people will buy all of them. I think they're gonna have a hard time keeping them on the lot.
Mm-hmm.
So all right, so some European sports cars came up this week. Koenigsegg is a $170 million investment from NEVS. And I know Koenigsegg is a big Tesla fan, like the CEO. The actual
founder, Christian is his name? Christian von Koenigsegg. What does it mean for the Swedish people when they have a von? That's not like a title or something, right? Is it?
I don't know. I mean, it's like Dutch van, like of. So, I don't know.
Yeah. But yeah, 150 million euros, about 171 million USD. It's a big investment for a relatively small company. And if I understand the announcement correctly, there's two different 150 million. They are taking a 20% stake in Koenigsegg. And for people who don't know, NEVS is the Swedish automaker that was Saab, and they were taking over by the Chinese. Now they are NEVS, which is just an electric vehicle company. They still have. They're still based in Sweden, but they're mostly a Chinese company now. They do a lot of business in China. So the 20% stays technically in Sweden, but because Koenigsegg is of course a Swedish company, but it's being controlled by China now. And separately, I found out that they're creating a joint venture with NEVS. And Koenigsegg, and NEV is putting $150 million in that joint venture also. That's my understanding. So there's 250 million euros here. A lot of money from NEV. Well, of course, we just reported that NEV secured like a $2 billion funding from Evergreen Day just a few weeks ago. Evergreen Day is, of course, best known for their huge investment in Faraday Future too. And now they're investing in battery manufacturer too. So Evergreen Day apparently is wants to take over the world with electric vehicles, and not just China. They want everything too. So, and in the announcement, Koenigsegg said that he wants to accelerate the electrification of it with that money. And like you said, he's a fan of Tesla, and he's made a comment recently about the Roadster, and because of course the Roadster is going to be a supercar that's going to make a lot of other supercars, including Koenigsegg's, look bad. And he said that he was embarrassed when he saw those specs. So, I don't know. Maybe they're gonna get their own super all-electric vehicle coming.
And then, so we have some charging news from the Volkswagen Group. Taycan owners will get 3 years of free charging on Electrify America's network, which seems nice.
When they're working.
When they're working. Well, I mean, I think they're back to working like they used to work.
Yeah, but even because okay, you're referring to the iPowered shutdown, when they shut down all the iPowered version, but I'm referring to when I actually tried to charge at one at the 50 kilowatt station. So that wasn't even one with the liquid cool cable that they had to shut down, and that didn't work either. But yeah, I was a little bit disappointed by the announcement because Porsche was the previous comment from Porsche is that they were actually making their own network in North America, and they're gonna do their own charging network with something like 700 stations, and they said that 200 of them is gonna be a dealership, and then 500 of them is gonna be elsewhere. But then they announced that, and there's not gonna be their own network. So I reached out to Porsche, and what they responded is that we never said that. We never said that. They said those articles that came out was based on comments made by their CEO of North America, Klaus Zellmer. And I got back those comments, and those comments sound exactly like they're making their own network. And all the articles that came out of them were reporting that, including ours. And they never decided to correct anyone on that. Like, I mean, okay, the PR person said that I was there when the interview was made, and that the comments were talking more about a partnership with a company for 500 station and then 200 station at dealership. I mean, okay, maybe it was the case. I wasn't in the interview, but everything that came out was about their own network, and they never sent out any correction, thing like that. So I don't think that's fair. But anyway, so we thought that we were gonna get more station, and we're not gonna get as many station.
No,
but.
And that brings us to Audi, also doing some funny charging things.
Yeah, they released their pricing structure for charging, and Audi always said that they were going to partner up with Ionity. They invested, while Volkswagen invested in Ionity in Europe, so they're going to use their network for the high-powered station where they can charge up to 150 kilowatts, which is the capacity of the e-tron. They also already said that they wanted to do something that where it's like one contract, one card, whatever, one membership card for all different networks in Europe. So now they are making true on that promise. But to get that card and then to pay for charging, the pricing structure. So those prices I'm going to release is for Germany, but they said that the price is going to be similar everywhere else. There will be a similar pricing. You can get what they call a city tariff. You pay €5 per month with that city tariff, and then you get access to 72,000 charging stations, but they are level 2 or 50 kilowatt charger. So not everything except Ionity with the 150 kilowatt charger. Everything else is okay. But you pay $5,000 a month. If you want to charge level 2, you pay €8 per charging station, session, €10 if you... use the DC fast charging 50 kilowatt stations. They don't charge you per kilowatt hour. It's just you show up, you pay for one charging session, and that's it. But €5 a month, then for the 50 kilowatt, €10. It's not that bad, but it's not that bad if you charge all the way through. So you're incentivized to wait until your battery is almost depleted to use the charging station and charge as much as you can, because you just pay one single price per charging session. It's not based on how much you use it. So I don't think that's optimal, but some people are gonna be able to take advantage of it, I think. Then you have the Ionity high-powered pricing. So this is called a transit tariff. So it's the same structure for the level 2 and 50 kilowatt that I just explained, but you have to pay €18 per month, so a lot more. And then if you want to use the high power station from Ionity, on top of that €18, and now there's been some people like trying to say that that's not true, but that's how I read it, and that's I'm pretty sure that's the case. €8 per charging session plus 0.23 euro basically centime. Per kilowatt hour.
Centime.
You sure about that? Okay,
in France it is.
Anyway, 0.23 euros per kilowatt hour. So both. So just to connect your car to the charging station, you have to pay €8. on top of the fact that you already pay 18, and then 0.33 euros per kilowatt hours. So I was calculating it, and basically, if that's really the case, and that's how it sounds in the press release email that they sent me. If that's really the case, then if someone is traveling like four times a month, like once every week, you're traveling once every week, you have a place for business that you know that you need to get to. Because it doesn't even make sense to buy that 18 euros a month if you're not going to use it regularly. So it's at the minimum, it's going to be like once a week or something. And then it comes down to if you charge like to 80% or something, which would be standard with a 95 kilowatt hour battery pack like the e-tron SUV, it almost adds up to close to 40 euros per charge within a month.
That's quite expensive.
Yeah, it's a lot of cash for, I don't know. I mean, if you're a power user, it goes down a little bit, but not that much because, yeah, you get more out of your 18 euros per month, but you still have to pay per charge and you still have to pay per kilowatt hour unless you try to do a mix between the station where you just have to pay once and not per kilowatt. I don't know. I don't like it. Audi's offering one year free of the transit tariff, so access to the INET charging network basically for free for a year. So first year, try to get as much as you can out of it, and then ease off.
Yeah, I guess prices will change as more and more people come online and there's more options out there.
Yeah, I hope so. I mean, if it's successful, actually, it's going to be like a big moneymaker, I think.
Because
it's something, it's an option basically. Option makes money, and then you can sell that option on the car.
Yep.
I'll be very interested to look at the take rate of the transit tariff for. After the 1 year. Well, is it always going to be 1 year for new buyers, or is the way they said it's not just like for the next year? It's for every new buyers they get 1 year. And then do you fall directly into the paid program after that? Like, is it like a software free trial for a month and then you get to automatically back in? So I don't know.
I don't know either.
Yeah. There's nothing big to supercharger.
No,
they,
not even
they
close.
Really should copy Tesla's model on that front. It's really good.
And the simplicity, and like, you don't have to do anything. You just go up and you plug it in and that's it.
And even though we've been complaining now that they increased the price, everything, but even though they increased the price is still a lot more simple than this. No price per charge, no price monthly, per charging session, per kilowatt hour, just per kilowatt hour or per time where unfortunately they can't sell per kilowatt hour due to a regulation. But hey, it's still a market that's in infancy right now. I think, you know, people are still figuring it out, and that's an example of it. Hopefully, it's going to mature a lot in the next few years. It will undoubtedly mature a lot in the next few years because it's becoming such a big business now. It's going to be huge business. There's going to be a million cars sold per year. It's going to be a very important business, so I think it's going to mature a lot faster. Anyway, well, let us know what you think, and thanks a lot for listening this week, and we're going to be here back here this week, next week, same place, same time. See ya.